Blog Talk Radio.
Another Norman Knight coming to you live from Cat Harbor, Virginia. I'm just waiting here for anybody to call in 347-945-6713 and we'll have you on with Norm. 59 minutes to go in tonight's show and the topics are pretty much up to you. One of the things I'd really like to talk about is, I know you're probably listening to me all over the country, but I know this made the national news. I live in Prince George's County, Maryland, even though I'm usually in Virginia on the night of the show. And I had I'm not sure if it's a pleasure, displeasure. I know I laughed. Listening to the whole saga of Jack Johnson, the county executive of Prince George's County, who was arrested by FBI agents on Friday for taking bribes, all kinds of kickbacks on construction projects across the county, obstruction of justice, hiding evidence. I think those are the things he was actually charged with on Friday. And it was rather, well, it was very amusing. It's all on FBI tapes, him telling his wife to flush a check down the toilet for $100,000 and then to put $80,000 cash in her underwear. $80,000 cash. Now, even if you got $100 bills, that's what? 12, 16, 50 packs of $100 bills to make $80,000. That is some underwear. So, I mean, what do you think about all this? As a teller to put $80,000 in her underwear. I mean, that is American politics. That is American popular culture. That's for sure. 347-945-6713 is the number. Jack Johnson is the topic. Let me go to my chat room and see if we have anything in the chat room. We got anybody aboard? Nobody aboard yet on the Norm at Night show, so I'm not even really sure anybody's hearing me. 347-945-6713 is the number. Let's switch to a little football. How about those Washington Redskins? Yeah. $78 million to Donovan McNabb. Another brilliant move by the Washington Redskins. Three interceptions, 58-28 beating at the hands of the Philadelphia Eagles. Not only did they assure that the Washington Redskins would have a mediocre quarterback, but they also somehow knew that they'd spend $78 million of their hard-earned money over the next 5 years. I don't know. I don't know if he has to produce. I don't know what the story is. $78 million. Oh, well, I'm just a poor kid from Buffalo, New York, and I can't even think about money like that. What do you think about all this professional football stuff? 347-945-6713. Hey, and how about those Buffalo Bills? Yes, sirree, Bob. We know for sure this year isn't going to be an 0-16er as the Bills win their first game on Sunday. I don't know. Looks like maybe the Dallas Cowboys are back. They beat the New York Giants to go to 2-8. Great season for those Cowboys. I hope Wade Phillips enjoyed watching the game at home. That's really all I have to say about that. Hey, the Cult. The Cult is in the chat room. Welcome, Cult. I don't know if you heard me talking about Jack Johnson and his wife putting $80,000 in her underwear to keep the feds from finding it. I guess they forgot they search you when they arrest you. Money, money, money. Man, oh, man, oh, man. We're just going crazy. Nobody on the board. We got five lines open. 347-945-6713. And you're on with Norm at night. So what do you think about the president's tour of Asia? There's a topic open for discussion also. President gets his ass handed to him in the last election, and he is off to Asia. He didn't seem to get very much over there. I'm sorry, I'm really beginning to become worried about Barack Obama and his presidency. You know, 1960, we elected Jack Kennedy president, and he was another smooth talker. We haven't had another Catholic since. You do the arithmetic and carry that out, if you would. Who knows the next time we'll see a black president after this presidency. I hope that's not the case, but you never can tell. Anything's possible in America. What's your opinions on all this? 347-945-6713 is the number. We're going to 10 o'clock tonight, and it should be a good night. We got 50 minutes left in the show, and those are the topics so far. I guess the other thing I'd like to know about, what's your opinion about Nancy Pelosi? Should she become the majority leader? I'm sorry, the minority leader. I forgot. It's really hard to stomach that for the fat left-hander. Nancy Pelosi, should the Dems elect her minority leader? I sure hope so, because there is an agenda still. The Democrats got unloaded on, but that doesn't stop doing what the Democrats do best, and that is take care of the people. The interesting thing, the ABC poll last week, Americans want tax cuts, but they're also actually seem to be in favor of health care. I don't quite understand how this electorate works. If they liked health care and they liked tax cuts, and it appears that's what the Democrats were doing, I guess it all comes down to jobs. Jobs, 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 jobs. Well, we're not losing any jobs. I don't think that we're going to be calling people back to work for. The real problem, at least in Norm's eyes, comes from the fact that we're losing jobs that are disappearing. In other words, people are being laid off from jobs that don't exist anymore. And the new kind of jobs that are coming into existence, I really doubt that most of the people being laid off will be able to do those jobs. So what do we do with those people? The real question becomes, what do we do with all of those people who are not graduating from high school across the country? This is millions of people. This isn't occasional pockets or a neighborhood in a big city. This is millions of people. Apparently, we're only graduating about 70% of our population from high school. Only about 20% of that is going to college. And of those ones who actually go to college or higher education of some sort, of that 20%, only anywhere from half to 75% are even graduated. So we have this vast number of jobs that are going to require some kind of higher education, and we have less and less people gaining that higher education across the country. I don't know. Whatever it is, this system we call school, maybe it's not working. What do you think of that? 347-945-6713. Is school working? Does school work? At least the way we're organized with school now? Man, this hot chocolate's good. Those are the topics tonight, 347-945-6713. Let's see what's going on in the chat room. TSA better not touch my junk. What the heck is TSA? I'm sorry, Colt. I'm not, are those the guys that search at the airport? I don't know. I guess it must be. Help me out with this topic, Colt. What are we worried about with this TSA stuff? Oh, man. Back to the switchboard. I'm still waiting for a caller here. It really is boring talking to yourself. You know, as long as we're on the topic of school, what should learning look like? I don't even want to call it school anymore. I think school, like we know it, has to disappear because it's not meeting any, I don't know, it doesn't appear to be meeting our needs. We have a smaller and smaller slice of the population actually graduating from high school and going off to university. I don't know what we're going to do. The Chinese are going to kick our ass. The Indians, the Asian Indians are going to kick our ass. They're out educating us. They're out producing us. They're just out everything us. I don't really know what we're going to do. Let's talk about outsourcing a little bit. Unfortunately, many people think that outsourcing is American companies going and building companies overseas. That's not the vast majority of outsourcing. Outsourcing actually is we close manufacturing plants here and we go and buy the stuff somewhere else. the flat world. I don't know how many of you have ever read, I'm so embarrassed. Tom Friedman's book, The World is Flat, or the second book, Hot, Crowded, and Something or Other. I've read them both, and I like them both. Hey, I got a call coming in. Go ahead. You're on with Norm.
Hey, Norm. How's it going?
Hey, I'm doing all right. It looks like I'm not having any problems tonight.
Ah, well, that's good. Yeah, I missed you the last 2 weeks.
Oh, man. 2 weeks ago, that's when I was in the play in the show. I got to play Kate Duncan. By the time after the dress rehearsal on Tuesday night, by the time I got to a computer, I was having all kinds of trouble. So I was stuck in a hallway in a school building. I said, screw that. And then last week, I don't know if it was Blog Talk. I don't know if it was me. I don't know exactly what happened, but I had a lot of trouble. And so I cut the show off early.
Yeah, I remember nobody could hear you at all. So kind of defeats the point of radio. So, you know. Yeah, well, I thought you'd be out on election night. That was the 2 weeks ago. And
I would have been too sad. I don't know if I could have said it.
I was looking forward to that, too.
I did try to get on. I did try to get on. That left in and not something.
I'm starting to lose you, dude.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're very distant.
Hello.
Oh, that now you're okay. it was an interesting night. You know, California just swung the other way completely. In fact, pretty much the West Coast went totally against the trend.
So what's it like having Jerry's Outback?
I'm not hearing you.
I say, what's it like having Jerry Brown back as governor?
That may be interesting. I somehow think, and I don't know why exactly, but he's practically forced to becoming a fiscal conservative. Because we passed a few other propositions along the way.
Uh-huh.
So he can't raise taxes without a supermajority, and now we've changed it so he can't raise fees without a supermajority or proposition. He has to go to the people.
Well, nothing's going to get done in California.
Well, the thing is that we're going to make them do the kind of cuts that they need to do, because we aren't going to have any more taxes and fees. We've had enough. So that's pretty much what the people said. Deal with it.
Well, have you had enough services?
They're going to have... Well, the
See, everybody thinks they should have the services, but nobody should pay any taxes.
Yeah, well, the deal is that, you know, some of... I mean... Our budgets are, I don't know how to describe them. They are so dysfunctional. They're pulling money from every little place. And we borrow money every month. See, that's the only option they're going to have left, is they'll still be able to borrow money. So I expect it's going to go that way. However...
That's worse than taxes.
Well, I suppose so, because... we have, I think, among the states, I think we have, like, the worst credit rating there is, which is still investment grade, you know.
Oh, no, of course. Governments are a perfect lender because they have to pay their debts back. Governments can't default and go bankrupt.
Most of them can't, yeah.
How do they do it? What do you close the government of California?
Well, what they do is they go into receivership and they renegotiate their debt. And I don't know. A good example would have been Orange County back in the 90s, New Haven. There are a few other ones. But the bondholders typically don't lose anything.
Oh, they can't.
Well, it depends on, you know, certain municipalities you can. Let's say they sell bonds to build a nuclear power plant and it never gets off the ground. Then you lose. You lose the whole thing. So there are the best bonds are ones where the issuer has the ability to raise fees or taxes. As long as you have that situation, you're pretty much safe, you know.
But a bondholder, as long as the government entity is in existence, is going to get their money back somehow, some way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, you know, I mean, my California bonds have taken a significant haircut over the last couple of weeks. I mean, you know.
Right. But they haven't defaulted.
No, and I don't think they will. You know, aside from that.
Well, they can't. They can't without closing the government of California.
Yeah, but see, some of these are municipalities. See, so I have school bonds. I have water districts. I've got, you know, it's in a mutual fund.
Oh, I know. Of the really interesting. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, you know, I've been thinking a whole lot about, you know, I've always believed that the institution of school doesn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a massive outlay by municipal and state government.
Mm. Well,
what if we abolish school?
Yeah, well, my district is technically bankrupt and, in fact, is in danger of being taken over by the state. It's that dysfunctional.
Right. Well, why don't we take a positive approach and just abolish school?
Oh, public education altogether? What?
No, abolish school.
Oh.
School doesn't work.
So are we saying that we do distance?
I don't know. All I know is school doesn't work. It costs way too much money. So let's abolish it. And figure out some other way to do it.
Yeah.
It could be public. It could be private.
Well,
let me just ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn in school that you used on your job?
Let me think. Well, the art courses, you know, I certainly used a lot of information there. That was valuable.
So you don't think you would have been an artist without school?
Exactly, because I wouldn't have known a good many things. I mean, it's conceivable that I could have picked it up myself, that I would have went out and bought books to learn the same material.
Or just put yourself around.
But the classroom was a better environment in terms of learning, you know. And
you really believe that? Fair enough.
I had one teacher in particular who was exceptional, and she was able to expand things dramatically for me to show me all the possibilities, you know. So, and in fact, I don't know that I would have even stayed in that field without her help. So, and then, you know, so I would say that even though I continued the education beyond that, you know,
right.
You know, let's face it, when I got out of high school, you know, was I going to continue college, which I couldn't afford anyway, or get some kind of, you know, just get a job and never return to that at all? You know, it was 50-50, you know.
No, I understand that. I just, the school, it's not working for people.
Well,
I'm not sure private schools are working for people.
Yeah, the only thing I've seen that's successful around in my area anyway are the charter schools. And they seem to have, you know, a stronger commitment. It's a lot more work for the kids, of course. And they just seem to work better than the massive high schools or elementary schools. I think maybe that's where we're losing a lot of kids, because these schools are too damn big, and they're very general, and, you know, let's face it, kids get lost and they drop out. I mean, it's pretty much, that's kind of what happens.
Well, it happens a lot, or what they do is irrelevant to the kids' lives.
Yeah, and I think across the board, from the parents to the teachers to the kids, everybody's losing interest, you know, in that environment.
Right, so let's stop it. Let's just, first, let's repeal mandatory going to school. You don't have to go to school between 5 and 16. That's,
yeah,
like,
well,
a prison sentence. That's like a prison sentence.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, I kind of thought about it that way when I was maybe 16 or thereabouts. 15. It was hard getting up in the morning and taking that damn bus in the middle of winter, you know.
Yeah, I understand, but I think it's way more than that.
Yeah,
I don't know. I guess maybe I've been, you know, on the other side of the desk for 31 years now.
Yeah. But see, here's the thing. Now, I don't know that I can say it began in high school. I think it really began in high school. I mean, I know you and I can think back to, like, our freshman or sophomore year, and we can remember the books we read. And we know which books were important to us. And which authors inspired us the most. And I don't know that kids can say that now. You know, I mean, for me, you know, Orwell and Thomas Hardy and William Golding's Lord of the Flies, you know, you read that? I mean, it was a real quick read, that little paperback they gave you. But you realized that, and you realized the whole thing could fall apart. You know? And you realize how thin, you know, the
veil of civilization is?
Yes, how, you know, it would take a very short time for us to, you know, start hunting each other down.
Well, we're doing it more and more every day.
And we
day.
Do. And, of course, it gives you it gives you insight into what's going on in the world. And I don't know that kids are getting that. I really don't know if it's there, you know. It could be, you know. I mean, I don't talk to kids very often, so, you know. Once in a while you see kids online or wherever, and they seem exceptionally bright and interested, and you say, that kid's going somewhere, he's got something, you know. But I don't know if they're the exception or not. So you're with kids all the time. So
right, but I'm with kids that choose to spend a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these kids spend more money in 1 year than I spent 12 years of college.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
The State University in New York was $400 a year when I went there.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, everything was a scholarship of some sort, either GI Bill or graduate assistantships or... I mean, I don't know what a student loan... I wouldn't even know how to get a student loan.
Yeah, same here. I never used student loans, you know.
And then I'd have to... now, you know, we got to save every dime we get. You know, my daughter... Well, that'll be coming up again in a month. Jesus.
Hmm.
I don't know where we get the money, but somehow we will. And then what happened? She's graduated. So what?
Yeah, well, I don't know what her field is, but, you know.
Sociology.
Oh, all right. Well, I suspect there are still good many jobs in that area. Not all of them the greatest paying jobs, but, you know. But if she has a specialty...
Jobs and jobs.
Yeah, well, if she has a specialty of some sort, then obviously that enhances her prospects, you know.
Well, we'll see what happens. She'll do all right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Still do all right. I didn't have great jobs my whole life. I still don't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't
you
say.
You know, I listen to these people. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm saying, you know, I don't think any of us have lived up to our potential. You know, it's very difficult to do that.
Well, you know what? You're probably right, but, I don't know. I guess I'm just as lazy as the next guy.
Well, think how many times you're in school and you should be, you know, hitting the books or doing whatever, but instead you're at the pub having pizza and beer, you know. And nobody
looks
at a book that weekend.
Well, but you know what? You're going to make a case that there's more to learn at the pub having pizza and beer.
Yeah, I guess, but you can't put it on your resume.
I have. No, I'm...
shit.
Master pubster.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. So, you know, for me, it's like... As far as I'm concerned now in terms of career and working and that, you know... I've accepted the fact that it's over, you know, that's done. So, you know, I consider myself unemployable. I mean, I guess I could go to Home Depot and I can, I know a lot about plants and gardening. I could probably get a job there. But, you know, even then it's like, you know, this would be part-time, it might be interesting, I don't know, but I don't see myself,
you know,
but there's no ambition to do any more than that, you know?
You know, you sure didn't, well, you don't know that till you start doing it.
I guess, yeah. I mean,
but you sure didn't learn about plants and things in school.
No, I learned that because I bought a house. Then I had to learn.
Exactly.
there was no choice, you know. It was like, you got trees. You got to take care of your trees. You got to take care of your lawn. You got to do this, do that, blah, blah, blah. You know, and you get into it. I mean, the first couple years, I was just very enthusiastic about the whole thing. rose bushes and vegetables and on and on, you know. I mean, I was just soaking up all that information and using it. Hey, you know.
Hey, all you people out there, I know there's some of you listening, 347-945-6713, or at least most of you are downloading the archive, because we're over 15,000 this week.
Ooh, baby.
Yeah, the next big milestone's 20,000. I'd like to be there by the end of the year, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, you know, I called Al-Qaeda, and I told them there'd be a secret message for them tonight. That's going to get you a lot of listeners.
You know what? You're going to have the Homeland Security people at my door. You keep talking like that.
No, they'll just listen in. You probably got 100 new listeners right now.
Yeah, you think?
I don't know. I mean, from what I understand, Homeland Security is involved in an incredible number of useless projects, and most of them involve listening to other people's conversations. You know?
Okay. It is pretty amazing.
I don't know. I mean, it started from zero, and now it's 250,000 people. and all they do is they track the internet going from place to place, trying to see who's the subversive, you know. So by now I imagine we're all on a list of some kind, you know.
Just so they don't touch your junk, right?
Don't touch my junk. I'm going to be in the airport next year, and I don't want my junk touched. Don't you know where that comes from? There was this guy 2 days ago, I think. He was at the airport, and he didn't want to go through the scanner. So they took him over the side, and they said they're going to do the pat-down. And it was I don't know if it was a man or a woman, but she had her gloves on, and she said, "I'm going to rub up your inner thigh 2 times from the front and 2 times from the back." And he said, "You better not," something like, you know, "don't touch my junk, you know, and it was a big episode, apparently. And I guess people at airports are really getting upset with this thing. Now, I haven't gone through one yet, you know, but these scanners, even though, from what I can see, it looks like a fairly anonymous figure. You know, I can't tell who the people are, and I can't identify any parts of the body. But people really think there's an invasion of privacy. And the pat-down, they don't like that either. So, I don't know.
Really?
Yeah. So, because they can do the pat-down in private, or they can, if you want, I guess they'll do it. They'll take you somewhere and do it, you know, in an office somewhere. But the thing is, when people do, they're holding up the airplane, or, you know, the flight. Because if you just walk through the scanner and stand there, that's one thing. But if you go through all this other stuff, they still have to hold the plane for you. So,
really?
You know, yeah, so you're ending up with a lot of late flights and whatnot. And a lot of pissed off people, too. So I don't know how far this is going to go. I think
how far should it go?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it is excessive. You know, the shoe thing is kind of ridiculous. If you can see through my pants, you can see through my shoes, I'm assuming. I don't know, but I'm assuming this is true. You know, the last time I flew to Buffalo, I didn't wear shoes. I wore my slippers.
Really?
Yeah, because they were easy to get on and off. And they were so damn comfortable, I had no problem with that.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, well, I heard that Ben Franklin wore his house slippers all the time. He just gave up on shoes. You know, because remember the shoes they used to wear in the 18th century? You know, they with the big heels, and they were pointy. And apparently he just couldn't get into that at all. And so he said, screw it, I'm going to wear my slippers, and that's it. So I thought, well, if it's good enough for Ben, hey, I'm going to do that. So I wear slippers all the time, and I don't care. And much, it's much easier on the feet.
That's true.
Yeah, so, you know.
Although I would wear my slippers. I don't wear slippers.
Oh, you wear
the... we got flip-flops.
Oh, those... Yeah, see, I don't wear those anymore.
Oh, I wear them all the time.
Yeah, no, I get these... they're made by... what the hell is the company? They're real famous. Rockport. So they're leather, and they're fur-lined, and they have these special soles, these airflow soles underneath them and everything. And you just bounce in them. They're just really comfy. So I say, you know, that's it. I'm an old person now. I can be eccentric, and that's the way
it is. That's funny.
So,
that's funny. I'm signing into my Twitter account here.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing what's going on in the tweet bill. I don't know.
Yeah, I went up to World Market. They sent me a $10 gift certificate for my birthday. And so I ended up, and then they had all this stuff on sale. So I ended up buying all my favorite stuff, you know, black olive bruschetta and artichoke bruschetta. I bought all the little gourmet items.
Oh, yeah, that's just, I'm having a gout attack right now.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, the pills are working.
Yeah, I've had a couple friends with gout, and I know they, you know, when it's acting up, it's bad.
It's no fun, that's for sure. My big toe, at least it's stopping to hurt, but it's getting back to normal. It doesn't quite bend yet, but yesterday, if I would have even tried, it would have been like instant pain.
Mm-hmm. Well, I get something, I don't know if it's similar or not, but, you know, I don't know if I mentioned it, but I'm at the pre-diabetic stage. But I get a lot of the symptoms, like the leg pain and all that, and the extremities, numbness and all that. So I have that issue, which is partially why I like the slippers, because they, you know, seem to make it easier, you know. But yeah, that's, you know, I mean, actually, I've done, you know, in terms of the weight thing, I'm down to 190 now. So I've lost 12 pounds since the summer.
I don't know
if that's going to help or not. I mean, I haven't noticed any difference, really.
I've heard it helps immensely.
Mm.
Hey, well, my NPR politics says that the mortgage industry's problems are still broad.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're dealing with, I forget what the percent. It's still like a quarter of all mortgages being underwater. And the banks themselves have got some serious issues. We'll see. There's a number of court cases going on. But when they started putting these mortgage-backed securities together...
Yes?
Well, it turns out that not all of the mortgages brought in there were even eligible, I mean, in terms of their credit rate, credit worthiness. And some of these things were on the way out before they even got packaged. So they were selling bad junk before it even got to market. I mean, it was already bad, you know.
But I don't understand. See, to me, it seems really simple. You have a mortgage. If you pay it, eventually the house is yours. If you don't, the bank takes it back.
Right.
Why is that so hard to do?
Yeah, except the bank doesn't have your mortgage anymore. You see, it goes into the security, and then the security is sold, and the security is not always sold to just one person or entity. That can be split up, too. So the government of Japan could own 20%, China owns 10%, a hedge fund owns another 20%. It could be all over hell. I mean, it's all...
Who am I paying the mortgage to? Who am I paying the mortgage to?
Well, there's usually at least a bank or some trust set up for receivership, you know, to get the funding. But they are usually just administrators. They don't have any of this stuff. That's why people are finding when they do pay their mortgage off, it takes forever to get the deed. You know, it isn't like, you know, when we were in Buffalo and Buffalo Savings Bank held your mortgage, and they always, you know, it was never going anywhere. It was always going to be there, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, but all of that, you know, that was part of our banking system, the savings banks and the savings and loans and all of that is, you know, gone. You know, so you don't have, local banking was actually very efficient.
I want to know how a mortgage can be, what did it just say here? Wait a minute. City borrowers whose homes were improperly foreclosed upon.
Oh, yeah.
If the mortgage is up to date, I don't care who owns it, the house can't be foreclosed on.
Mm-hmm.
If the mortgage is not up to date, the house can be foreclosed on.
Yeah, apparently they got ahead of themselves in the process.
You mean they started foreclosing on unforeclosed houses?
Things that were close, but not exactly there, yeah.
Okay, technically, you're 1 month behind, they can foreclose.
Technically, yes. But if you sneak a payment in there, apparently that turns things around.
As long as it brings you up to date.
Mm-hmm. But you got to remember, they have let some of these things hang for like, you know, 1 and 2 years. These people have not been foreclosed on.
We're going to have all new people in Congress come January 3rd. Let's see how they do with it.
Yeah, I don't expect a whole lot. I mean, I expect a whole lot of crazy stuff to come out of the House. And I know that's just brewing. That's ready to go. Daryl Issa he's going to be a maniac. He's going to be hunting for scandals left and right, anything he can find. So you're going to have that episode. That thing is going to be cranking. And that's the slime machine. That's going to be working, you know, that'll be working 24 hours a day. The other thing...
Yeah, till some of the spending hits their own districts, and then it stops.
Well, I think, you know, what should be interesting will be, you know, the whole thing that the Republicans are trying to put off now with the no new taxes and this and that and cutting spending. Well, you know, a moratorium on earmarks is absolutely nothing. I mean, it's a tiny, tiny sliver of the overall spending. The big issue is going to be this. If you really want to reduce the deficit, you're going to have to cut defense, and you're going to have to at least modify Social Security and Medicare. I mean, so, or we'll just say cut, you know. So you're going to have to cut.
I don't think so.
But the thing is, there's no other way to do it, I mean, at that end, without raising taxes. So you've got your choice, one or the other. Preferably, you do both. You do a balance between the two, but, you know. But they've painted themselves into this corner where, you know, ideologically, you know, they ran a campaign of anti-government. But when you get into office, guess what? Anti-government doesn't work that well, you know? Because once you're in office, you have to make it work for your constituents.
That's
so,
who you're there to rest.
Yeah, but you see where all of their rhetoric turns on them now. I guess we've seen it many times before. You know, the anti-government, anti-waste people, and then they get into power, and now you're the guy. And then you become like Murkowski, and you build the bridge to nowhere, and, you know, that sort of thing. You know, I don't give a damn how conservative you are. Once you're there, you can't be a conservative anymore. At least not the 100% ideological fiscal conservative, because it simply doesn't work. You know, they've got to raise... They're going to have to raise the debt ceiling. They're going to have to expand debt just to pay the interest on what they've already borrowed. And they have no choice. There's no choice whatsoever. So here you are, adding another $1 trillion to the deficit. And a lot of other things will be coming up. Of course, the expenditures for the wars are emergency funding, so you just add that on, you know. But it's still deficit spending. You know, we have to borrow money to pay for Iraq and Afghanistan. That money isn't coming in, you know. There's nowhere for that. Our actual revenues should continue to go lower, I'm thinking. So you're going to have some holes there, too, in terms of your budget. So I want to see these guys try to talk their way out of it. It should be interesting, of course.
Well, it sure should be.
You're aware of George W.'s book?
Yes.
Now... Have you caught on to that? There was a little paragraph in there about Mitch O'Connell, or McConnell.
No.
Okay. Well, yeah, this is kind of interesting. In 2006, McConnell went to Bush's office and said, "You know, we need your help right now because we're not very popular." You know, he was talking about the midterm elections in 2006. And he asked Bush to bring troops back from Iraq as a show, all while he was making all these pro-war speeches, pushing the surge and this and that, you know. So here he wanted to alter military strategy just to benefit, you know, his party in the election. So, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, the newspaper, I think it was in his hometown, called it contemptible hypocrisy. But, you know, MSNBC's been picking up on it, but I haven't seen anything in any other media yet. And McConnell is pretty much quiet about it. But the interesting part is, one, that he would say this or try to do this, and the other is that Bush would put it in his book, which is probably more interesting.
That is pretty good.
I mean, you know, because this is the kind of thing you really don't want people to know about. Because it tells you then these people really don't care when it came to Iraq or the soldiers or anything of that sort. They didn't care. It was only their, you know, their positions covering their ass. That's all there was to it. Another one that came out with Hugh Shelton. Yeah, he put his biography out over the summer, and that was kind of interesting too, because he, during the Clinton years, they used to have these like morning breakfast things where they'd spend like 1 or 2 hours together drinking coffee and just talking over everything, and very informal groups. So he listed everybody that was in the room that particular day, and he said that one person who he said was a senior cabinet member asked him if they could fly a U-2 very low and very slowly over Iraq so that Saddam would be guaranteed to shoot it down. The idea being it would be a precipitous event which would allow the United States to declare war on Iraq. Now, this is during the Clinton administration, okay? So it tells you how long these guys have had it on their mind. So when you look at all the people who were in the room, and they were all engaged here, there, and where, there was only one person left that it could possibly be. And it was Madeleine Albright. So she was willing to sacrifice one of our airmen, you know, our pilots and our planes to put it down and bait Saddam. And this was like in 1996, 1997. And so Shelton said, we can do that. And she goes, really? And he says, yeah. Just as soon as we train your fat ass to fly the plane and go over, we can do that, you know, as soon as you're ready. And then she says something like, oh, I knew I shouldn't ask this. But you see what it tells us is that, you know, it doesn't matter if they're Republicans or Democrats, that these people, you know, in these positions, think like that.
Well, so what are we supposed to do about it?
I don't know how you take it, because these are not people who have ever run for public office. They're academics. This is where, you know, like Condoleezza Rice and Rumsfeld and people like that, you know, they're totally removed from you know, the population, from the citizens. You know, they have their own ideas that somehow exist on another plane. And you know, the thing is that it's not that one part, it's not, you know, exclusive to one party. I mean, we think of the Republicans and we think of the neoconservatives, but there are just as many in the Democratic Party, so, you know, you're going to get this. And it tells me that the idea of invading Iraq, you know, it didn't stop with the first Gulf War. It stayed on everybody's mind all the way through until you finally had a president that allowed it to happen, and boom, there you go.
Well, and on that, we're going to, that's about it for Norman Knight tonight. We're having a good old time, and we've really enjoyed this. I hope you all listen and love the archive. And hopefully more of you will come into the live show next week. It was great to hear from you, Colt.
Always good to talk to you.
Always a great conversation. And we'll be back to you. We are done in 10. And we'll go out of here with a little music.
Good night. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Talk to you later.